Hey guys, so this is a video I'm making to follow up to the Matrix 1 in 4 video that I put up at X. I specifically brought up the film Under the Silver Lake in that video, and several people now have asked me to help them try to understand this film. So I'm going to do that from my perspective, my review of the film. My voice is a little cracked up. It's been a very rough week, so you'll have to excuse that. So this movie was released in 2018, and it's one of those films that people either love it or they hate it a lot. There's not a lot of in-between on this movie. And I've read many reviews that absolutely loathe it, and I'd say they probably just didn't get what was being communicated here. And it's not even their fault. It's the way our society is that makes it so that people don't see things like this when they're right in front of their face. And in that way, this movie kind of emulates society very well. Spoiler alert. Oh, and I keep forgetting when I make videos like this, obviously, spoiler alert, I should be doing that. I should be saying spoiler alert. I just assume if you're watching a movie review, probably you know there's going to be spoilers. I mean, I would assume people would know that, but eh. Although I will say, I hope that people who were confused by this film might want to take another watch after they watch this review. So Under the Silver Lake is a neo-noir film made to appeal, I feel like, to millennials especially. There's lots of references to 90s music, Nintendo games, other pop culture references, all surrounding, kind of centering in that time period and then kind of blooming out from there. But most especially about conspiracy theories. This entire film is just replete with codes and ciphers and references to hidden conspiratorial things all over reality and under the surface of reality. And the director, David Robert Mitchell, actually consulted with Kevin Knight out of the University of Southern California, who was part of an international team that cracked the Copiali cipher, which is a 105 handwritten page tome that sat undecipherable for 260 years. Kevin Knight actually worked with the director of this film to help bring all of these different types of codes and ciphers into the movie. The director took it so far in this film as to use an app called What Three Words, and there are Reddit threads that are dedicated to decoding all of these different codes that are embedded in the film to try and solve the puzzle, the riddle of what is this film really saying? What's it really about? And people in there have concluded that the film is actually pointing to a specific location in Kings Canyon. But I'm guessing if you did do the 14-hour hike it would take to go to that spot and come back, it would be an overnight trip. You'd have to walk 7 hours, 8 hours, sleep and come back, unless you try to do it all in one day. That's a pretty long hike, though. There's probably a geocache for a joke about how your princess is in another castle. That's what I'm guessing, if I had to take a guess, because the entire film itself with all these codes, the abundance of codes is so much. It's dripping with these things. It's ridiculously over the top. And I really think it's a bait and switch.
Our world is filled with codes, packs, user agreements, subliminal messages. Here, here, here. Words and symbols hidden in print advertising, sexual innuendo connected with corporations.
Mitchell knows that a lot of, especially the guys watching this film, are going to overlook a lot of the deeper symbolism that's here and focus entirely on the external stuff, the codes, the pop culture, the sex references, and not see what's actually going on right in front of them, what's actually being communicated here about ourselves, our connection with ourselves, our connections with others, our love, the nature of love and care. And throughout the film, all of the relationships, a lot of them are framed in some kind of Hollywood or pop culture mediated fashion. I mean, even Sam's first phone call from his mother is about how she feels connected to Janet Gaynor, which is an actress from the silent film era.
Since I was a little girl, I've always admired her.
Who keeps popping up throughout the film as a, I guess, representation of Sam's mother.
Remember I told you about that Janet Gaynor movie? I feel connected to her. Is that silly?
The entire film is embedded with codes on basically every single level. lots of reflection on what's important in life.
Thinking about things a lot. Uh-huh. How does the world work? Why are we swimming on the rooftops when there's an ocean right over there?
What is real versus what is fake? What actually matters versus what ultimately doesn't?
Well, I don't have any answers.
Who does? Nobody does.
And for that, we follow Sam, an average guy who lives in LA. He's about to lose everything he has. And he's stuck in the shallow end of society, the surface level of society, in that grind where all anyone ever talks about is work.
I'm okay.
Good. Are you at work?
What do you do? I mean, for work.
What are you doing? You working?
Yeah, of course. How about you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do I do for work? How's work?
Work is good. I'm just floating along.
Where do you work?
I'm working hard.
work good? You're working hard?
As he deals with himself and his relationship with women, and he's about to fall down the rabbit hole to self-discovery, and very, very hard. And the backdrop to this is all the pop culture imagery that is produced by Hollywood, the lens through which a lot of modern Americans, and I would say by extension, much of the world that the West has exported this imagery to, view reality. Oh, and there's also a dog killer on the loose. At the beginning, Sam is in this coffee shop and he's staring at these two girls, and the long, slow camera zoom lends to the idea that he's pining, wishing he could pierce the mysterious veil or even approach that female sphere, which he, through the first part of the film, is very much on the outside of. His relationship to women is mostly from a distance. He's always watching them or following them, but unable to really connect. He uses binoculars to spy on an older woman who walks around topless on her balcony across the way, someone who appears incredibly comfortable with herself and seems very much in touch with her inner child and her mothering sides as she takes care of numerous birds. And one of them, a parrot, keeps repeating this unintelligible phrase throughout the film.
There's the neighbor's parrot.
What's it saying? Rotterdam?
I don't think so.
But Sam's really interested in his Marilyn Monroe-esque neighbor, Sarah, who seems to have her own program going on. And Sam does have a physical relationship with a bit actress that we see, but this is probably the most unsexy, disconnected, non-intimate sex scene that I think maybe I've ever seen portrayed in a film, literally ever, bar none. They have a conversation about a Kurt Cobain poster signed by his daughter Frances on Sam's wall, and then watch a news broadcast about the disappearance of a billionaire the whole time they're having sex. And it's doggy style, by the way. Lots of dog references in the film.
What if the owner don't show up?
I think they gas them.
Huh?
For a purpose. So anyway, it's very blah. It's very gross. It's basically like the only purpose of this sex is to stimulate the limbic system for a few minutes, and that's it. There's no real other reason for this to even be happening at all. It's no intimacy. There's no energetic connection there. There's no care that's actually being taken from one person to the other in any way at all. In fact, Sam has some secret writings on his bedside stand with codes and things he's been messing with. And when this woman who he just had sex with, like moments ago, tries to look at it, he gets extremely protective of her not being able to see his secret writings or whatever, and doesn't want her to know what he's thinking or what he's working on. So that they don't have that level of intimacy at all, not even remotely. And it's really weird, though, because the Playboy magazine that he stole from his father when he was a kid is there with the image of the first girl he says he ever masturbated to on the cover. And this exact symbolism will come back near the end, literally in the Silver Lake Reservoir, but I will get to breaking all that down in a moment. I'm not trying to go through this entire film scene by scene, but I kind of like, there's a part of me that really wants to, but that would take me forever to edit. It's hard. So we begin with Sam. He starts off the film as the archetype of the fool. He's going to go on that journey. He's just kind of floating around in this society, basically failing at the surface levels of it. And we see a squirrel fall out of a tree and die right in front of him after he leaves a coffee shop, which is not something I've ever seen in my entire life. Have you ever seen a squirrel fall off of anything ever? Squirrels are pretty clever. I don't know about that. So this symbolism is very heavy on this journey that Sam is going to go on of death and rebirth throughout the film, because he's going to fall. He's going to take a pretty high fall into the depths of himself and what's going on here. And the mystery of the disappearance of the beautiful Sarah is the inciting incident for the rest of this film. It sets Sam on this Jungian journey of initiation and self-discovery. And there's just so much symbolism throughout this film to back this up if you really take the time to consider it. For just one example, he literally comes face to face with his shadow at this moment where the scene itself has even been set in such a manner to look like a mirror world of light and dark. The way the tree is there and the bridge and everything. The bridge between him and his shadow, by the way, has the number 4 on each side of it. So it's just like a mirror reflection of light and dark. And it's right after this moment that Sam gets sprayed by a skunk. And from then on, for the rest of the film, he's now been kind of tagged and set apart from everyone else, who keeps mentioning how much he stinks.
Some people don't realize this about themselves.
Don't take this the wrong way, but you smell so bad.
What's that smell?
You smell that? It smells like skunk.
You don't have a good smell about you.
The movie is always hinting at the greater mystery or seeming lack of mystery that is found by the average person in the surface level of modern society. And a lot of people are very unhappy. They're just very unhappy in this 5-sense surface realm. Sam's friend correctly points out that generations of men have been raised on video games. And he also points out that 100 years ago, anyone could just go out in the woods and flip over a rock and discover something. And right when he's asking, where's the mystery that makes everything worthwhile? Right at that moment when he asks that, in the background, we once again hear the parrot across the way, the parrot's unintelligible talk, and pretty loudly too, almost as if the bird is answering this question.
Where's the mystery that makes everything worthwhile?
So the statement is about a perceptional problem, not a real problem. The whole film begins on the other side of this window being cleaned that says, beware the dog killer, but the G in the word dog has an arrow on it. So if you flip the word dog, it obviously spells God, which would make it beware the God killer, the connection with God inside each person. Because if you're trained by Hollywood what to think and feel about your life and your relationships and how you perceive yourself in reality and how you perceive reality in general, you might as well be a dog, right? Lots of references to Sam acting like a dog, other people in this film barking and acting like dogs. Sarah barks as a dog in one of his, I guess, visions or dreams. It's the dream world and the reality become extremely tenuous. You don't know which one is happening at any given time at certain points in this film. And I think that's done on purpose and done very well. So if you're not reacting to a situation using your own critical thinking skills and knowing who you are when you react to that situation, but just reacting in a Pavlovian sort of fashion to whatever situation you're in, then you might as well be a dog. We talk a lot about this with the dog and the eagle symbolism in the Overlooked series, Breaking Down the Shining. Now, I went into a whole breakdown of the Trinity of Woman, the triple goddess metaphor, in relation to how it's portrayed in the Matrix films in that review on X. I'll go ahead and throw a link to that down in the description in a pinned comment, so you guys can go see that if you haven't. But I also mentioned Silver Lake in that review because the same symbolism is all over this film too, and heavy.
All these holy trinities of women thriving like plants under the heat of the city's male gaze. 3-3-3-3.
Sam's whole journey begins after Sarah disappears by trying to find her, following three girls, literally driving around in a white rabbit.
Do you know a redhead and a blonde and a brunette that drive a white convertible rabbit?
So he's following three women in a white rabbit. He's following the white rabbit.
Hey, did you find those girls you're looking for? forward.
And every code that he finds through those girls, once that happens, are numbers that all equal 13. So 1 and 3, once again. So 1 and 3, once again, Neo and Trinity. It's the same formula over and over and over. But the irony in Under the Silver Lake is that while the masses are relating to each other in this Hollywood-trained, dog-like fashion, Mitchell also portrays the elite class as not understanding this Trinity either.
As we reported earlier, Sevens was found dead in his car with the bodies of three women.
And it's pretty hilarious. You have wealthy elites who are faking their own death so they can go down into Egyptian tombs that have been built underneath Los Angeles and lock themselves in there with three much, much younger women.
Apparently, the remains of a dog were found in the purse of one of the victims.
And the three girls are apparently being programmed with the 1953 Marilyn Monroe, Betty Grable, Lauren Bacall screwball comedy, How to Marry a Millionaire.
Big room full of nothing but rich millionaires.
I don't know if you guys have ever seen that movie. It's kind of, I'm not even sure what that, like, I watched it after I watched Under the Silver Lake for the first time, and I'm not even sure what the point of that film really is. I mean,
yes, just watch the fur fly as the most talked about girls in Hollywood go out loaded for big game.
It's got a really weird, there's a lot of movies in the 50s, especially like the original Father of the Bride, promoting a very materialistic view of relationships, love, reality. It seems very purposeful and cloying and ham-fisted. It was terrible.
Three fascinating females who pooled their beauty in the greatest plot against mankind since Helen of Troy, Marie Antoinette, and Venus de Milo.
How to Marry a Millionaire came off that same way. I didn't even think it was that funny, so I'm not even sure why they call it a screwball comedy. I mean, I think Marilyn Monroe's good comedian, but I mean, it's just such a, I don't know, seemingly pointless film, really, in a lot of ways. I mean, maybe it's because I wasn't born in that time period, so I don't know. I don't have the mindset that that is speaking to at all. Quite possible, but I was not feeling that movie in any way. I don't know. I could take it or leave it. But you have this girl who is obviously very programmed by this movie. I mean, her entire room seems to be this movie. She has these dolls. They have codes. I mean, it's a whole thing where they're really, I mean, that's so obvious, right? That she has her three friends. She's got the three dolls. She's watching the movie with the three women. They're trying to marry a millionaire. Like, that's the whole point of their existence. I mean, it's pretty in your face. It's very, very blatant. I mean, which again, you have a man, a wealthy so-called elite man getting sealed into a tomb.
They're tombs for kings like me.
With three young women.
About to be sealed in a tomb with my beautiful brides and all of my worldly possessions.
And the plot is, so they can basically do all the same stuff they're already doing on the surface reality.
And we are going to have delicious meals and wine and television and sex. Enough to last 6 months.
And then somehow, though, through this process of being sealed in this tomb with these three young girls, this man believes he's going to ascend.
It's not about burial. It's about ascension.
They're going to be ascended or whatever.
We will be beyond this universe, living together like kings without limitation.
Like, it doesn't really even make any sense. And all of these wealthy dudes get three different girls, like three different young girls with different hair colors or different surface characteristics, basically, to try and make into a female Trinity instead of finding a woman who is self-actualized by embracing the threefold aspects of herself, her inner child, her mother aspect, and her wise old crone aspect. Then again, these men haven't done all that much deep introspection and shadow work either. The whole building a tomb and going underground thing seems to be a way of going around that process, like a cheat, which is not going to work. That's not how this works. You can't cheat this. This is not something you, there's no cheat codes. It's not, this is not the Konami code. You can't do up, up, down, down, left, right, B, A, select, start, and get extra lives. That's not how it works. You have to actually go through the process. You actually have to do the work. Sam also in this movie confronts and defeats the songwriter.
There is no rebellion. There's only me earning a paycheck.
It's a very graphic, head-smashing scene. A24 movies seem to be really about that, if you've seen a lot of their films. I like a lot of A24 stuff a lot, but there's a lot of head-smashing going on, and it's very symbolic of breaking down a thought process that has controlled a mind.
I created so many of the things that you care about.
Which, again, Is it even real, or is this happening in Sam's head? We don't know. It's a mistake to just assume that everything we're seeing in this movie is actually happening in real physical time. Symbolically, though, it is like he's ridding himself and his mind of these illusions. The illusions of Hollywood programming, the illusions of what our lives are for, what love is, what it should be, you know, what a woman should be and what a man should be, all of that stuff.
That Kurt Cobain's Fender Mustang guitar.
And he's even using Kurt Cobain's guitar to do it. The literal guitar from the poster of Kurt Cobain that he has signed over his bed.
Well, you have everything.
No.
I mean, this is a world that's telling people that the only worthy time in their lives is this little tiny window when they're very young.
We have this tiny little window where we can have fun.
Which is bullshit and ridiculous. And actually, I would suggest my 20s were a lot worse than my 40s have been because I didn't know shit about shit in my 20s. So how did I know how to enjoy my life, really? They tell you that enjoying your life is going to parties and getting trashed, man.
I'm getting trashed, man. Isn't that what you're supposed to do at a party?
And I just think, you know, is that really all that there is to it? No, there's so much more. And I don't think I could have done that in my 20s because I didn't know who the hell I was in my 20s at all. I was still lost in the same world Sam is in this film. I mean, a lot of what we're sold out of that system is complete horseshit. It's just not true. And it really does impede people's abilities to understanding themselves and each other in ways that I think are in some ways really not that great for society. Oh, I almost forgot. There's a subplot with the Curse of the Owl's Kiss, and that's a big conspiracy that's supposed to be behind the scenes of everything, is the Owl's Kiss curse. And Sam meets a guy who writes a zine about this, and he goes to his house. And I think it's interesting that his house is number 1492. I don't think that was an accident.
Take a look. That's the sign of the Owl's Kiss right there. On every dollar bill in this country.
Where this man is obsessed with decoding Hollywood conspiracy theories and has collected the death masks of dozens of famous people and hung them all over his walls in his living room. And his take is completely inverted.
I really need to get a family. So I have somebody to leave these to, right? These people, they need to be remembered.
And one of the particular things, somebody was asking me, what is the Owl's Kiss? You know, what is the point of the Owl's Kiss? And in my view, this is a massive projection where someone believes something so fervently, so ardently, that they kill themselves by it. The belief is so powerful that it even gets transferred to Sam.
A lucky soul who finds himself the recipient of an owl's kiss. What a bunch of horseshit.
Which is actually how the contagion of powerful projections works in reality. But it's obviously in the dream realm, at least in part, or in the space between sleep and reality for Sam, because when the owl lady attacks him, he points a gun at her. She runs away and locks herself in his room. And when he runs in there to look for her, he's looking for her in his sock drawer. I mean, I don't think she could fit in the sock drawer. If she can, that's pretty special. So this, again, this kind of thing is done many times in this film where you don't know, like, is it real? Is this reality? It seems impossible to be actual reality. And it's very much like The Shining. There's hints that what you're seeing may or may not actually be happening, but they're incredibly subtle. And I don't know. I think that's one of the best ways to do that in a film. And I mentioned the magazine on his bedside stand with the girl on it from his first childhood sexual fantasy. And it turns out to be the golden daughter of the missing billionaire. And she's always wearing gold, just by the way. And Sam follows a coyote, symbolically a trickster who is both creator and destroyer.
You ever find yourself alone with a coyote? You don't run away. You follow it. See where it takes you.
To a party at this girl's house in his pajamas. And there's even a moment where he's wearing this white t-shirt and he walks into the party and a girl who's covered in butterflies, which is a symbol of the renewal of the psyche, says to him,
I like your shirt.
Because now he's down to white. He is plain. He has no graphics on his shirt. He's down to his base self now when he's walking into this party by this point in the film. And at this moment, he has to confront his ex-girlfriend who rejected him and left him. So he's now facing his fear, his female fear here. And only then does he get to meet this golden girl from his original fantasy. You see how that works? And face that. So he has to work backwards down to this moment.
You know who painted it? It's Janet Gaynor, the actress.
And they take a walk and literally go skinny dipping in the Silver Lake Reservoir, which has been made to look impossible instead of real. When you see the scene laid out, the moon and how you can see the Hollywood sign and the Griffith's Observatory like that, all in the same shot, very large. I mean, I've been there. We've been there. That's impossible. That's not a real view of this place. So this is very dreamlike in its quality. But the Silver Lake is, of course, a reference to the subconscious, where we see this girl get shots. And the image looks exactly like the cover of the Playboy magazine from Sam's fantasy, his earliest fantasy. So he is with this girl who embodies the symbolism from both his mother and his father, right? The programming that he received as a child, because she's mentioning the Janet Gaynor painting. So his mother is there, but also the Playboy magazine.
I found it in my hand. My dad's tool drawer in our garage.
So his father is there. So it's his childhood programming that led into his fantasy life of females. And this is what's under Sam's Silver Lake. This is what's in his subconscious mind that he goes swimming in literally after he's brought to this point of being a blank slate. Then he goes swimming in the sea. See how he's doing this? See the symbolism I'm talking about? Do you see what Mitchell is putting down here? He literally goes into the Silver Lake and literally watches his false fantasy of what a woman should be die and sink right in front of him in the Silver Lake. I almost forgot to add this part, and it's actually really important, so I needed to add this in. But there's a scene at the end after he confronts the elite guy who's taking his three women down to one of these crypts, and he finds out where Sarah went and everything.
It's all just a shitty sawdust-filled rabbit.
The homeless king has him chained to a chair in an underground tunnel and confronts him about why he has dog biscuits in his pocket.
We found these. Why do you have dog biscuits in your pocket?
When I first saw this movie, and for a very long time, that scene specifically very much confused me. I was like, why is he so adamant about asking about these dog biscuits? But once I fully started to understand what I feel like is being communicated in this movie, that scene makes all kinds of sense, because he's confronting him about who is it that he's trying to appeal to with these dog biscuits. And he's not just talking about actual literal dogs, like the pet. And Sam admits the reason he's been carrying dog biscuits in his pocket all this time is because he thought if he just gave the dog a treat and petted its ears, everything would go back to normal.
Why do you have dog biscuits in your pocket?
I wanted to give the dog a treat and rub its ears, just the way I used to, and then everything would be good again.
And that is more of this Pavlovian training, this idea.
Pavlovian training turns this duck into an entertainer.
About how you're supposed to be in relationships, and that's not how it works. You can't just give the dog a treat and pet its ears and expect everything to be good. That's no effort. And it's also expecting someone to respond to you in a very Pavlovian-like fashion, which is bad. This is all bad. This is not a good way to be in a relationship, to have someone just expecting you to act like a trained animal who just responds to the least amount of effort possible. And I really do think that's part of what's being communicated in that scene. By the end, Sam finally takes his mom's advice from the beginning of the movie and watches the 1927 Janet Gaynor silent film Seventh Heaven as he ponders everything he's been through in this movie. And he finally sees the bigger picture here. He finally sees himself. He finally sees what it is he actually needs. And once more, he hears the call of the unintelligible language of the bird across the way. And as Young and others have pointed out, birds are a symbol of transcendence. And this time he follows that call and he spends the night in the arms of the woman, the bird woman across the way. And she doesn't think he smells bad. She thinks he smells like patchouli. So this is probably the first real intimate connection that Sam has made in his entire adult life, I'm going to guess. The final scene, he's out on the bird lady's balcony now, and he is fully transcended. He went from a dog at the beginning of this movie to a bird, his lower self to his higher self. He's looking back now at the tiny pop culture trinket-filled apartment that shaped his entire reality and what was meaningful in the world up until this moment. And he's watching it, and as the music swells up, a policewoman brings in his property manager and they both come into his apartment to repossess his old life. But he just smiles. And you realize in that moment, along with Sam, that ultimately none of that stuff mattered. None of it. The whole time, none of it mattered. None. Because going inside of himself, deprogramming himself from the matrix and decoding the mystery of himself so that he can find his highest version of that and then make an intimate connection with someone else who knows her true self. That's the real video game, guys. That's the real leveling up. That's the real conspiracy. That's the real path to solving the deepest mysteries of this life and our existence in it. So this movie isn't about a literal dog killer. It's about a metaphorical dog killer. It's about killing the false Hollywood god that people treat as their master, and beware of the god killer that kills your connection to God within yourself. It's about the liberation from the programmed lower self so that we can be reborn and integrate ourselves and self-actualize into the highest version of our true self that we can even be, which is solving one of the greatest mysteries of our individual existence. And the thing is, I think Mitchell is trying to appeal mostly to a masculine audience with this movie, although I will say I love this movie very much. And upon further consideration, watching it again to write up this review this morning, I would now say it's probably this is one of my top three favorite films of all time, at least for right now. People will spend forever trying to decode their external reality without ever bothering to look within, to decode what's going on inside of themselves, inside of their minds, inside of their spirits. They will focus on literally everything else outside of themselves but themselves. And it isn't until Sam goes on this fool's journey and goes through this initiatory process and actually faces himself and confronts his fears and the shadows and programs lurking inside of himself under the Silver Lake that he begins to really wake up to the true mysteries of this reality. This is the real waking up. This film portrays the real waking up. It's not waking up to the matrix of how corrupt and how many things we're taught are lies and all that stuff. I mean, that's part of it, but the real waking up is waking up to your true self, finding that, going down the rabbit hole of that conspiracy and finding who you actually are underneath all of that bullshit. And that's what's buried under the subconscious waters. In the depths. Under the Silver Lake.